Welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. So this channel is quite close to my heart because I train coaches in embodiment. I mean, why? Because if you don't work with the body, you're missing a lot. Whether you're a coach, a therapist, facilitator, whatever, that's how you go deep quickly. That's how you do stuff that's sticky. We have to take the body into account. This channel is sponsored by Dylan Newcombe and Uzazu Embodied Intelligence. Dylan is a genius, quite simply put, and I wouldn't say that about many people in this field. I've been studying with Dylan for, God, the first time was probably 10 years ago in the Netherlands. Speaks fluent Dutch, by the way, as well as Korean and a few other languages. What I love about Dylan is his ability to make models of things, looking at how embodiment works. His system, Uzazu, U-Z-A-Z-U, is really all about state shifting. So I think of him as the sort of master of state changing, how we can shift our state, our client's state, and how we can develop ourselves through those different ways of being. So I think for coaches and therapists, it's like easy to learn, practical toolkit. I've used it myself over the years. So if you want a 3-day online training with Dylan, then look at the link below, or you can go to Uzazu, uzazu.org. And even easier, he's got an embodied assessment there you can do as well. We all love doing these little tests about ourselves, but this is an embodied one. So there you go. Welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. I'm gonna be on this one a lot just because there's lots of cool people on here. Lots of people, I think, you know, well worth a listen. Embodiment in facilitation is so necessary. So from me to you, welcome.
Today's session is bringing the body into the conversation with Nick Poole and Margot Rossi. Nick is has 30 years experience as a shiatsu therapist and teacher. He's also studied Seiki, NLP, clean language, and mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. He's a teacher with the Shiatsu College UK and director of the London Mindfulness Practitioners, which is a non-profit group for professionals who use mindfulness in their work. His book, Words That Touch, How to Ask Questions Your Body Can Answer, is a comprehensive guide to using clean language in bodywork therapies. Margot Rossi is an acupuncturist, Asian medicine practitioner, health educator, and movement instructor with 30 years experience in Asian medical arts. Trained in the US and China, her passion is helping people cultivate awareness of their mind, body, and spirit, and take charge of their well-being. An engaging and innovative educator, Margot's mindfulness-based health education programs promote community and individual well-being through self-care, lifestyle, and alternative medicines. Her book, To Be Like Water, Cultivating a Graceful and Fulfilling Life Through the Virtues of Water and Dai-Yin Movement, will be published by Singing Dragon Press in 2021. Over to you, Nick and Malcolm.
Thank you, Oscar.
Thanks, Oscar. So yes, as Oscar was saying, our background is in East Asian medicine, mine in shiatsu, Margot's in acupuncture. I should point out that Margot is in North Carolina, so it's 5 o'clock in the morning for her. So maybe we could all have a sympathetic yawn just to start the session. We've both for many years been fascinated by the kind of language that can help our clients come to a sense of their own embodiment.
Yes, and we're so happy to see you all this morning. Thank you for showing up. We really appreciate you visiting with us. And we're curious if you would put in the chat how familiar you feel with clean language. So it might be very familiar, somewhat, not at all. We just want to gauge where you are. And also, if you're a coach or a therapist or a student or a client or something else that brought you here.
Yes, so Panayota is pretty familiar with clean language.
Oh, great. It looks like we have a little range here.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Good to see you, Eve. So in this session, we'll be exploring the basic ingredients of what we call body-friendly language, and specifically giving you a taste of clean language, which was developed by David Grove, a New Zealand therapist, and what these kinds of language are and why they're important in our work with our clients and patients and in our relationship with ourselves too.
Yeah, and we'll be bringing it to light through a case study that'll give us a little view of how we can use clean language in the clinic.
And we'll be inviting you to try a couple of exercises that'll take us into our bodies, experience how language can help us to do that, how we can bring the body into awareness and into the conversation. So this is where we'd like our first slide, please.
Oh, maybe our second slide.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you, Mark. So what do we mean by bringing the body into the conversation? I'm sure we all have an idea of that. Biologically speaking, we know that much of our body is made out of water. So we thought today we would start off with a little metaphor, because in Asian medicine, we take that metaphor seriously. So if you all would, if it's okay for you to imagine your body as like an ocean, and you can see a certain distance down into the depths because the light of the sun can come in and we can see what's swimming around in that water. But beyond that space where the light can penetrate deeper down, it becomes mysterious and hidden. There's information there. There are things there that we could become aware of, but we just can't see them yet because the light hasn't penetrated that far. And, you know, in Asian philosophy, there's a concept that awareness is like a light. And maybe from whatever tradition you come from, that's a familiar metaphor, that awareness is like a light. And as we are able to shine that light of awareness, it can illuminate the depths and we can see what's hidden there. We can get some information from what's happening deep down in the organs, in the tissues, in the fascia, in the nervous system, in the bones.
And the way that we can lead and guide our attention, that this light of our awareness safely into the depths is of course greatly enhanced by the quality of the listening and the kind of language that we use. So in the metaphor that Chinese medicine offers us, this the warmth of that light is what softens the fear that might block us as we face the unknown inner depths or face what we think we can't face.
Yeah, and the safer and more comfortable our body feels, the more likely it is to allow some bubbles of understanding to come up. There's also bubbles of intuition. They may be memories. They may be resources that come up. And one of the most fascinating things for us who like language is that those bubbles come up as metaphors. So these metaphors, when we can listen to them and ask the right questions, they can really connect us to our resources, our potential, and what's possible in our lives. And that, of course, is what we want for our clients and, of course, ourselves and each other.
So if we can stop the screen share there and just come back to this question of why is it so difficult for the everyday mind to connect with the body? What do you do if you're a practitioner of any sort when you're working with a client who seems to have no map of their own body? And the answer to this came for me when I was researching my book in the work of the British psychiatrist Ian McGilchrist, who spent 20 years researching why it is that our brains are divided into two almost completely separate halves, and why, while both of those sides of the brain are constantly processing the same information coming from outside or coming from in from the body, they seem to do it in very different ways. So the left hemisphere, for most people, is where the verbal mind resides, where we understand the content and the meaning of language. And its main job is to give names to things. and to separate everything that we experience into specific categories. So when it looks at the body, the left hemisphere tends to see it as a collection of mechanical parts that it can give names to. And if those separate parts of the machine go wrong, they can be fixed. And it kind of resonates quite a lot with the way the medical mind has developed over the past couple of hundred years in the West. The problem is that the left brain usually has trouble recognizing anything that it can't easily put a name to, or anything that doesn't fit into one of its pre-existing categories. Meanwhile, over on the right side of the brain, for most people, the right side of the brain is experiencing the body as an organism, as an organic thing, as a collection of different systems that are listening to each other and are part of one whole being. So it's much more sensitive to the non-verbal embodied information that flows up via the vagus nerve to the brain. And it's tuning in all the time to these sensations, our gut feelings, things we feel in the heart, and so on, but it doesn't have words to describe them. So the way the right brain understands language is more in terms of its, what Stephen Porges calls the prosody, the rhythms and tones and emotional content of language, but it doesn't actually have words. So it has to offer that embodied information to the left brain to find the words. And one of the most important ways that that can happen is through metaphor. So a client might say, like, you know, I feel like there's a rock in my stomach. Or after a great session, they'd say, oh, I feel like I'm lighter than air. And Asian medicine is full of metaphor, like those bubbles that Margo mentioned, the bubbles floating to the surface are metaphor. And in clean language, we take those metaphors very seriously. We just get curious about them.
Yeah, so if you want, let's dip a toe in the water of metaphor. We'll do an exercise and see if we can elicit one for ourselves. I'm going to ask Nick a question. And if you would, you can ask that same question to yourself and see what comes up for you, if anything. So if you'd like to take a moment and just kind of get settled in yourself. I'm just feeling my contact with the ground here. However you settle yourself is just right. And just notice that you're breathing. And slowly, as you just continue your natural breathing, letting that light of awareness come into your body. So Nick, when you're feeling settled, comfortable, and safe in your own skin, that's like what?
An image just pops straight into my mind, and it's a very tall pine tree near the sea I think the sunlight coming, like the sun is coming up, the light is on the side of the pine tree. That's the image that comes.
Is there anything else about that pine tree by the sea where the light is coming up on the side of the tree?
Yeah, then I'm really aware of all the little pine needles on the kind of sand, on the ground, sandy, and I almost see myself lying down there on the sand with the pine needles and just chilling, man. Yeah, that's a surprise. I just had no idea that image was going to come to me.
Yeah, so we're curious to hear how that went for you all. I'm going to ask you the same question again. When you're feeling settled, comfortable, and safe in your own skin, that's like what? And is there anything else about that?
And just noticing what comes, and these great comments, Kevin, a mountain lake shimmering in the half light. And Doris, I feel like a strong root going deep into the earth, taking nourishment from it. Tiny roots coming out from the big one, really connected to everything. Yeah. Lovely. So just noticing, and of course, not everybody gets a metaphor, and that's fine. Sometimes it takes a while for the information to come up from the body. And sometimes it takes a while for the left brain to recognize that this is valid information. But anyway, let's just move on. Have a look at three core characteristics of body-friendly language, the kind of language that pretty well every presenter in this conference has been using. So if we could just come back to the slides again. Thanks very much. So first of all, first quality of body-friendly language, we're aiming to do something. We're aiming to direct our client's attention or our student's attention. So it is quite directional. That can be quite strong and directive. For example, if you're leading a new movement class of beginners and you want to make sure they're all doing the same thing, or it can have a much softer, more invitational quality. For example, if you're teaching a mindfulness class.
Oh, so sorry, Nick. I'm looking in the chat and there are some beautiful things.
Oh, great. Let's just come back to that. Let's come back to the
sorry,
chat. Margot, missing
a few. Yeah, I just want to acknowledge what people have shared. I'm sorry to draw us back.
No, absolutely. Very, very, I don't know quite know how to say your name, Senya, but I felt very surprised by image. A loaf of freshly baked bread, yeah, in the basket, yeah. Being in my heart, yeah, it is, yeah, you get surprised by these things. Really at home by water, yeah, lovely.
Beautiful, thank you all for sharing that.
So that's the first characteristic of body-friendly language. We are giving some directions, which it's instructional, but it can be quite directive or it can be quite soft.
Yes. So Mark, if we could have the next slide. Thank you. So even as we're being directional and instructive in our language, body-friendly language also allows the client or the patient or the student to have a choice about what they're doing. For example, if I'm teaching a movement class, I might invite my students to open your arm to the left, if that's available to you, or to the extent that that's available to you. So just giving them some agency in what they're doing. And it's what I call truly informed consent. They have a choice in what's happening. And Mark, if we could have the next one. Thank you. So body-friendly language is also accepting, not judging something as good or bad. I don't know if y'all can see the text on there. It might not be showing up, but thank you. Wonderful. I chose this slide. This is a field near my home, and it brought to mind Rumi's, the Sufi poet's poem or saying, beyond the idea of good or bad, there's a field. I'll meet you there. So body-friendly language doesn't put on a judgment of whether something's unhealthy or healthy or wanted or unwanted or balanced or unbalanced. It, as is true of any mindfulness practice, you're just noticing what's here in the moment without judging it and bringing some curiosity to it.
Yeah, and that makes a big difference when we're bringing attention to the body. Instead of bringing that left brain idea of the body as a collection of mechanical parts, and the typical attitude that left brain tends to have to, say, to a part that isn't working so well, a part that's causing chronic pain, is to label it as the part that's causing chronic pain, and then to start judging it or having feeling frustration about it. And of course, that gets even more in the way of clear, pure communication in a non-judgmental way with what's going on in the body. So body-friendly language brings the qualities of mindfulness to our relationship with the body. We're suspending judgment. suspending judgment and simply being present with what's there. So yeah, Mark, if you can stop the screen share again, thanks.
So it's easy to notice the difference when someone uses language that isn't body friendly with us. We have a certain response in our body happens, especially if it's an authority figure like a doctor or a teacher or a healthcare practitioner or boss. So we wanted to invite you again in the chat just to take a moment to consider if you've ever had a conversation with an authority figure wherein you felt like the language they use wasn't appropriate for you. Just to consider for a moment, what was that like? And which of these aspects of body-friendly language weren't being honored? If it was being given a choice, if it was not being accepted.
Yeah, especially if it was like a healthcare practitioner or a therapist or a coach who just was using a wrong kind of language for you. Has anyone had any experience of that? Maybe if you want to put your comment in the chat. If you go on my website on the video page, there's an interview I did with one of my colleagues. Shiatsu teacher is also a dancer and a choreographer, and she gives an account of in her early days learning to dance. Her dancing instructor was giving really strong directional language, with also very judgmental language. You should be able to do this, you should be able to do that, and actually pushing her physically into the move. And when you see her telling this story on the video, for a moment you can see a little flash of that trauma that is sort of still being expressed as she acts it out. It's really interesting. Anybody got any? Yes, not with an authority member, with family members and teachers, certainly. Yes, indeed. Okay. But just sort of being aware, as soon as you hear language that isn't body friendly, you know, what happens? We close up, we contract, the body stops offering that information to the left brain, communication breaks down, really. So we wanted just to give you another example, another exercise to experience this. And of course, the usual guidelines apply here. Just be sure to stay in charge of what is happening for you. As Mark said on that introductory video, when you're working with the body, you can go very deep very quickly. So if at any point at all you feel you need to pause or just stop, then of course do. And of course, if you're watching the recording of this, it's entirely up to you whether you participate in the exercise at all. So let's just use a little body-friendly language to have an experience of those three core principles. So just settle in yourself again, bringing your attention back to your sense of yourself, allowing your eyes, if they want to half close or close completely, just coming away from the screen. And so here's a little direction. Bring your attention to the soles of your feet, whether in a chair or sitting on the floor. The soles of your feet are a good place to start, because as any reflexologist will tell you, they have so many nerve endings. And as you bring your attention to soles of feet, just noticing the contact your feet are making with the floor.
And then moving your attention to the feeling of contact of your body in the chair or on the floor. And taking time to bring that light of your awareness here and letting it widen to your whole body.
And as you do that, just widening your awareness, that light of awareness to your whole body. What do you notice? Maybe, yeah, Anastasia wants to move. Is there some, yeah, what do you know? Is some part of you that seems to be drawing your attention? Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. But if there is some part of you that just seems to be drawing your attention, whether it's through a sensation or through a desire to move or some kind of tension, whatever it is, what's that like?
Notice if you have any impulse to change it or fix it or make it better or different. And if it's possible, letting go of that impulse, if it's there, and simply saying yes to whatever is here.
And noticing what happens when you hold that word, yes, in your mind, as you stay with that part of yourself. What happens? Maybe it stays the same. Maybe there's some response. Just holding that word, yes. And whatever happens, opening your awareness now, gently, to the whole of your body. And just saying thank you to your body for bringing this part of you to your attention and beginning some kind of conversation.
And asking yourself, what do you know about that now? And when you're ready in your own time, doing whatever you need to do to come back to being together.
And if you have anything that happened and you want to put that in the chat, they'd be very interested to hear from you. Happiness with the yes. The eye side starts to settle back into the chair. Oh, so the left side. Yeah, the left side of the brain starts to settle back into the chair. Yeah. Thank you, Tamsin. And lying down, you're ahead of the game there, Andrea. Lying down and noticing my breathing movement was as a wave, like the ocean, that brings awareness up from the feet. Fantastic. And Kevin, I want to grow roots into the ground. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, how does this actually work in clinical practice? Margot's got a case study to share with us here. And so I'll hand it over to you, Margot.
Yeah. So I don't know if we've mentioned this already. I think we have, but I live in a rural mountainous region of North Carolina. And I practice Asian medicine here and I teach movement too. So it's a little odd given my environment. But one of the cool things about where I live is that I get to work with people from all different walks of life, socioeconomic statuses, levels of education. And regardless of where people are coming from, I have found that working with clean language has been really very possible. So I wanted to share that because I think it's important. For 20 years, I used neuro-linguistic programming language and body-friendly language. But when I added in that the clean language to my practice, no matter who I was working with, it really made a big change for me and for my patients. And I noticed that rather than me being in charge of the session or, you know, being the authority figure, clean language helps them be their own authority figure. And of course, when that happens, when people tap into what's right for them, their resources, their own, their metaphors, their intuition, their own wisdom, things start to change more easily because there's hope there, there's empowerment there. There is great power in that. And I find now that more and more, I just want to step back and just be a facilitator rather than be an advisor. So we have a case study for you to kind of illustrate this point. This is one of my patients who contacted me early in the pandemic. She typically comes for acupuncture, but she asked if there was something else we could do. And so we did a clean language session online, followed by Daoyin therapeutic movement practice at the end. So Nick and I are going to play this out for you. Nick is going to play me. He's going to be the practitioner, and I'm going to represent my patient.
Okay. So the patient arrives, and this is what she says.
She says, I have a splitting headache. I think it's related to my high blood pressure. There's also a tightness in my upper body and chest.
So if you're a practitioner of any sort, health practitioner of any sort, you might already be thinking diagnostic. There's quite a lot there, splitting headache, high blood pressure, tightness upper body, chest. But with clean language, we just put all of that diagnostic stuff aside and simply come back listening to the exact words that were spoken and offering them back in the simplest kind of question we can. So Margot says, and is there anything else about that splitting headache and tightness in your upper body and chest?
I can't get a good breath in. It's a big deal. I can't breathe. And I start to panic.
And on whereabouts is I can't breathe and I start to panic?
My ribs feel tight here. So she puts her hands on her ribs by her sides.
And so Margot asks, and is there anything else about my ribs feel tight here? Exact words, anything else about my ribs feel tight here? Mirroring the gesture.
They need to lift and expand. I just need to lift and be expanded.
So she's already beginning to move from just being aware of her problem to something happening, some kind of movement, some kind of expansion. And so Margot asks, and lift and expand is like what?
I feel like I need to be lifted and expanded on many levels.
Many levels. Notice we're kind of moving away from the specific physical sensations and even the sense of panic to something that's there on many levels. We don't know what that something is, but Margot asks, I want to be, she says, wait, one more comment.
I want to be all I can be. And the breath is key to that. When I can't breathe, it's an obstacle I stumble on.
Margot asks, and is there anything else about that obstacle you stumble on?
Yeah, and here I noticed she started looking around as if she was looking for something. And she says, it brings up all this programming from my father that I can't do better, that I'm not good enough, that I'm not enough. I feel that in my head. That makes the breathing harder. I'm not enough. That's interesting. That's part of this. So here she's sharing something that probably wouldn't have come up in a typical therapeutic acupuncture setting if we were just exploring her symptoms.
Absolutely. And she's beginning to make connections between the symptoms that she can feel the connection between the breathing and something that's going on in her head. So Margot asks, she brings in one of our sort of closing questions in clean language, just asks, and what do you know now about all of that?
It's good to know. It's not just about the blood pressure. I realize it has to do with not feeling good about myself, given everything that's going on, not having work, being older, having to reinvent myself, and that breathing is key to relaxing.
So I noticed a whole lot of other issues are coming in now, being older, not having work, reinventing myself. And remember, she came in with just those three physical symptoms. And with just a few clean questions, she suddenly has a whole different understanding of not just the symptoms, but her relationship with them. And that's where Margot asks, would that be a good place to lie down and start to do some practical body work?
Yeah,
and she of course, the answer is always yes. Yeah,
readily available for yeah. it.
And what did you do then, Margot? What was the?
Yeah, so then she laid down, and we did some movement practice, actually related not only to the symptoms that she shared at the very beginning, so targeting those zones of the tightness in her ribs and chest and the high blood pressure, but we also worked with that sense of empowerment within yourself, that feeling of knowing and trusting yourself too, which you can do through movement, working on the different meridians.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just seeing the chat, Kevin's talking about, I can relate, as it took till I was 51 that I was diagnosed with bipolar because nobody asked the right questions. Yeah. And Tamsin is observing that this client of Margot is not only diagnosing herself, but coming up with a remedy and a reason for why she felt like that. Yeah, absolutely. Just a simple question to reach the whole being. Very lovely articulated. Thank you, Divya. Okay, so now let's just move on to looking at three core qualities of clean language. What is it? What's so special about clean language? And yeah, Margot.
Oh, yay. Thank you, Mark. I like that you gave us a preview of our slides. I appreciate that with the thumbs up. Yeah, so clean language is a form of inquiry that lets those bubbles of understanding and intuition and memory and resources come to the surface, just as you saw with that client in that case study. So Nick, will you kick us off with our first of our, we are going to give you again, three principles of clean language. There are many, but we're going to give you a little taster here.
Yeah.
And Mark, if you could start the screen. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. So you notice that Margot worked with the client's own words, and that's why it's called clean language. So clean language is like a filter. It's like you've got a face mask on as the practitioner. None of your stuff is coming through because the questions are designed to fit around the exact words that the client uses and to offer those words back to them with the minimum of interference. So they filter out for my stuff as the practitioner. They filter out my expectations, my desires, my unconscious biases, my presuppositions, just by being very simple, very open. And instead of paraphrasing or interpreting the words, I simply honor those exact words because they resonate for the person. And that gives that client a clean, clear space to be in and to explore what's going on inside.
Mark, if we can have the next one. Thank you. So the second point about clean language that we wanted to bring up is that it focuses on metaphors. So it elicits metaphors. And metaphors create a bridge between the mind and the body. They're part of that bubbling up. That's what those bubbles are sometimes, or metaphors. So in body-friendly language, we use a lot of metaphors. For example, if I'm teaching a yoga class, I might say, stand tall and firm like a mountain, or imagine your spine like a string of pearls. That's very directive language. In clean language, we leave out our own metaphors and we work to help the person we're working with elicit their own metaphor and create some understanding and relationship through these clean questions with their own metaphor.
And this metaphor, this picture is a metaphor. Anyone who's been to San Francisco knows that the Golden Gate Bridge connects the the buzz of the city and all of that Silicon Valley digital virtual world, go across the bridge and you get to the amazing redwood trees. It's like the left brain and the right brain. The left brain is there, buzzy and virtual, across the bridge with your metaphors to the much more natural, organic place where these extraordinary redwood trees grow tall. So if we could just move on, Mark, to the third slide.
Yeah, and I don't know how well you can see this image, but this picture was drawn by somebody I worked with yesterday and a week prior. She's an artist. She's also a nurse who does, she analyzes research that pharmaceutical companies do on their drugs. So her work is really intense, very stressful. And she was struggling with coming to terms with leaving her job and just bumping up with some fear about doing that. So as we work through clean language, she came up with this metaphor of when she finally felt her resources, that she was like a woman with a lot of eggs in front of her, laying in her lap, the eggs of potential and possibility. And that's one of,
Nick. That I don't know if any of you were in my colleague Suzanne Yates's session in the conference, but Suzanne gave this wonderful demonstration of what the kind of exercises you can do to connect with the inner energy channels that relate to female fertility, female sexuality, and this, you know, this metaphor of the eggs is a wonderful resonance for that of fertility in every sense, as Suzanne was saying. So again, any comments from that, please put them in the chat. I just thought it was so wonderful that Margot was, you know, could be working online with that client who's a nurse and an artist. And, you know, if we can encourage our clients to actually put their metaphors into any form of a picture, a movement, whatever, it just, again, it adds to that sense of empowerment. So one final.
Sorry, Nick. I just seeing a request in the chat to see a previous slide, and I'm not sure which one that is. Divya, if you could tell us.
I think it was the face mask slide.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's Divya's asking. Divya, which one did you want to see?
Thanks, Mark.
Previous slide for a second. Before the second state, I think probably Divya means the drawing, the client's drawing. Anyway, the slides will all be there after the show. So let's just move on to one final meditation. And of course, one key point about any kind of language that we use in mind-body therapy, body-friendly language, clean language, it has to start from you. It has to start from your own mindful relationship with your body, with your diaphragm. As Stephen Porges says in his brilliant work about the polyvagal theory, the diaphragm, the lungs, the heart are all connected through the voice, through the larynx, through the throat, to the muscles of the face, to the way we interact through language with our clients. So we need to make sure that we are coming from a very centered, embodied place within ourselves. So in this final meditation, we'd just like to see what happens when we ask you a few clean questions. And for this, we'll be coming back to that metaphor, if you got a metaphor, from the first exercise, just about feeling settled, comfortable, safe in your own skin. And I think some people have been doing this already, but if you have a place to lie down, then we're inviting you to do that. It's because it changes things when you lie down. The relationship between the head and the body is really different, and sometimes it can help. So just take a moment to get somewhere to lie down if you want to do that. If you want to stay sitting, that's absolutely fine. And as long as you can hear us okay, if you are lying down, you don't need to see the screen. And yeah, so when you're comfortable.
Yeah, whatever position you want to be in, taking your time to get comfortable. And coming back to that sense of feeling settled, comfortable, and safe in your own skin. What's that like for you now? Settled, comfortable, and safe in your own skin.
And just take a little time to notice if something does come. Maybe an image, maybe a word. Whatever it is that comes, is there anything else about that?
And whereabouts is it?
Just getting a sense of, is it on the inside or the outside?
And does it have a size or a shape or a color or a sound?
And just noticing what has come to you, if anything, so far. And is there anything else about feeling settled, comfortable, and safe in your own skin?
And then taking a breath, and when you're ready, allowing that light of your awareness to widen out into your whole body.
Breath by breath. And then when you're ready, asking, what do you know now about all of that?
And what difference does knowing that make? And just taking a moment to complete that. If you're lying down, just gently feeling into your fingers and toes, maybe rolling your arms and legs if you want, and eventually just coming to hug your knees into your chest if that works for you, rolling to a side and then gently coming up to sitting or coming back to seeing the rest of us here.
And put something in the chat if you want. And some lovely things here from Andrea. It's like a prayerful being still in my heart, pulsing like a very soft drum in the distance. And it wants to stay here. It wants to. Often we get that sense that this part of ourselves actually has a desire of its own. And Jill makes a really good point. It doesn't have to be just a sound or a size or a shape. It can be a movement. And when I allow myself to make that movement, it brings such joy to my being. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Andrea, yeah. I'm noticing you can just choose. That's the thing about choice. Choose to stay in this state. Yeah. So if you have any other comments, just please do put them in the chat. Give you a moment to do that. Resilience in my clenched fists. Whatever happens, I won't be broken. Thanks, Kevin. And Anastasia. Yes. It's like mushrooms in a forest. Plenty from the same roots in warmth and silence. Notice how different all these metaphors are. These are not generic. These are not archetypal. We're not telling everybody to be a tree. These are very individual, unique kind of metaphors, waves for Divya. Okay. So we just, Mark, if we could just have one more slide just to see what kind of questions we were asking there. These are some of the absolutely most useful and simple clean questions you can ask. Whatever, remember, they're always based around the last keyword or gesture that your client offered you. Then you take that and you offer it back. Is there anything else about that? What kind of thing is that? Whereabouts exactly is that? Which is a great one for bringing it into the body usually. And does it have a size or a shape or a color or a sound? And if you are deliberately trying, remember, all kind of body friendly language is directive. If you're deliberately trying to elicit a metaphor, then using that slightly odd construction there, and that whatever it is like what? Okay, so those are some absolutely basic clean language questions, very simple. And
if you're interested in more of them, there are plenty more on Nick's website and in his gorgeous book, Words That Touch, too. We were wondering, Mark, is there a way that we can share a PDF of that last slide that has, can we do that?
I don't know if we can share a PDF, but I've just copied into the chat all of the links.
Great.
So that they can just, participants can copy it.
Thanks. Super. So we just got a couple of minutes left for any questions, comments.
Yeah, we had a question earlier on from Kevin, which is, what is the evolutionary advantage of a split brain?
That's a good question. And Ian McGilchrist does talk about that. And the simplest way to put it is that the, as he describes it, the left brain is looking at the categories of things. So if you're an animal looking for food, you can know one kind of food is poisonous maybe, whereas the other one is what you need for your lunch. Meanwhile, the right brain has this in-the-moment awareness, kind of peripheral awareness. It's very aware of what's going on at any time. And that kind of awareness, that alertness, that mindful in-the-moment awareness is what makes sure that, and you're having your lunch, you don't end up as someone else's lunch if a predator is around. That's what one of the things that Ian McGilchrist suggests might be the reason for this evolution, because all animals and birds have these split brains. Good question, thanks.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And then we have another question from Divya, which I think was connected to your last slide. How do we elicit?
Well, sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. You can ask those questions, a metaphor question. You can try to elicit a metaphor. Maybe one will come, maybe not. I'm sure some people watching this didn't quite get a metaphor. But if it doesn't come, that's fine. You just carry on the conversation. Something comes. And as Caitlin Walker said in her great presentation earlier in the conference, whatever comes is what you work with, because this is clean. We're not trying to manipulate. Clean language, of course, is a bit directive, but it's trying to minimize that amount of direction. Yeah.
Yeah. And Divya, eliciting those kind of preliminary questions that are inviting us to notice something, the physicality of what we're talking about, does it have a location? Is it on the inside or outside? Does it have a shape, a size, a color, a sound? That's helping something that may be more abstract come into a little bit more of a physical shape. And that can help support that metaphor question that comes next. And that's like what?
Yeah. And I just wanted to say, if you are interested in more detail about Stephen Porges' polyvagal theory, which is becoming hugely popular in the world of psychotherapy and getting much better known now in the world of embodiment, we have a edited extract from the chapter in my book on the polyvagal theory, and that should be available within the next 24 hours on that Chiological website. So just go there and should be available.
Great.
Okay.
Great. Thanks so much. Well, we're just coming to the end of the session now. I'm sorry that we're not able to answer any more questions. There is Divya was asking again about that slide. And are you saying that the slides could be made available, was that right? Or were they through the link that Mark put up earlier?
Well, don't they appear in the recording that's available for 48 hours?
That's true. There is also that. Yeah. So we're going to just wrap it up now. Thank you all for being part of this session. Thank you also, Nick and Margot, for what was just a wonderful introduction to clean language and a chance to experience it for ourselves. I really, really enjoyed that. So if you want to continue the conversation with the people that you've been in the session with, or share it with other people who've been in different sessions, there's a chance to do that via the Facebook groups and via the coffee breaks, which are a bit more interactive. You can talk about what you've found here. You can hear from other people what they've experienced, and Nick and Margot may be around as well if you have other questions to chat to them. You also have a chance to own this library. It's a natural next step, really. With all of the information that's available here, it's impossible to digest it all in one go. So you can give yourself time to progressively process and work through the material at your leisure. There's also the learning lists that come with it, which give you a natural logical progression through the material, and audio only formats so that you can listen to the sessions while you're doing other things. It's 50% off until the end of the conference. So after the conference, it'll be double the price. It's just a great thank you for the people who've worked really hard to make this happen. And it's what makes it able to be free while the conference is on, so that people can watch it. That's all from wrap up. So we're going to go back to Nick and Margot for their final words about top tips for embodiment.
Margot?
Well, before my top tips, I just want to thank you all for coming and sharing what you did in the chat, and just being present and open and checking us out, checking it out, checking yourself out. And I also want to say thank you to Mark and Oscar. You guys did a great job. Really, thanks so much. Super support at this conference. Really appreciate it. My tip. Gosh, I don't know why this is coming up, but I'm going to say it. Love thyself as you would thy neighbor.
Thanks, Margot.
Yes, you're welcome.
I love Kevin's, is that a shark or a... I can't quite see what it is, Kevin, but anyway, my top tip, one of them, is make sure you catch Tamsin Granger's session tomorrow morning, my colleague in Shiatsu who's doing end-of-life care. And my top tip, if you want the left and right brain to start communicating better, just sing. Singing combines the melody and the rhythm with the meaning of the words. Keep singing. That's all you need to do. Singing, moving, dancing.
It's now or never.
It's now or never. Thank you. It absolutely is now or never. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everyone. Great to see you. Session. Thank you again to Nick and Margot for a great session.